This is WABF, and it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campominosi with the Common Sense Campaign Tea Party. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning right back to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to see you again.
You as well.
Boy, I tell you, we had a busy week last week. We had a forum in Bay Minette on Monday night. Tuesday, we had another forum in Foley. Thursday, we had our board meeting to go over, you know, who we're going to endorse. And we'll get that word out later. But I have to say that... got this thing coming up on tomorrow night at Fairhope that we're, you know, hoping to see a good crowd to listen to the District 2 County Commissioners, and I think it's House District 94, forum between, Joe Faust and his challenger, Jennifer Fidler. So we're going to have, you know, a continuing number of these events until May 24th.
So people need to like the Common Sense Campaign.
Campaign.org. Go to our commonsensecampaign.org website.
And or Facebook. You can also find it on Facebook.
Either one. And I know that you've got it on your Facebook.
Yeah. Let's just say tomorrow night, candidate forum, 6 p.m. at the Fairhope Library.
Exactly.
And are you streaming these?
Yes, it'll be live streamed too.
So on Facebook?
On
website?
Facebook.
Okay.
Yeah, the Facebook website.
Very
so,
good.
I mean, the point here is that it is the political season, and we're doing everything we can, as Common Sense has always done, to educate the public about these candidates who want your vote. And I think the lesson that we've learned is that these candidates will say anything to get your vote, and then they'll do whatever they want to do or do what they're told to do when they get to Montgomery, or, for that matter, to D.C. So it's important for us to be able to have these forums, but it's more important for you all to come and listen and ask your questions. Everyone will have an opportunity to turn in a card with a question for either, you know, the House members who are running, or for the county commissioners. So we're going to do that. And again, like I told Laurie, we're going to have more of these coming up. We just have to see how the schedule goes. We'll see what happens. But my point is, if you're free, try to come and talk to your neighbors and your friends and get them to come to the Fairhope Library. It's always been a good setting. Last time we did there in 2018, we had, you know, a packed house in there for the forum with Chris Elliott running for state Senate and other people who were running against him. So at any rate, that's what we're doing. I was certainly glad to have a break from politics on Saturday. Got some yard work done. That was nice.
Good.
But then Sunday, it's right back to the grind getting ready for today. So here's what I'd like to do today. Okay, I want to talk a little bit more about the Ukrainian war, just kind of put it into the context of what the big picture looks like in terms of the international system. I've talked about it before. I need to explore that a little bit more and to see what Biden is doing, because it seems like the Biden administration is becoming less concerned about, you know, getting the Russians mad at us and becoming more concerned about beating the Russians, which is a good sign in my view. Okay. I want to talk about this business of the new Ministry of Governance different disinformation. I mean, it's Orwellian in its you know, context. And I do think that one of the things that we need to do is start challenging this right from the start. And I'll talk more about that in a minute. I also need to talk about Biden's polls. I mean, he's down to 33%. We need to look at the policy implications and the performance problems that he's having. Again, nothing new here, but it's interesting to see how he continues to hew to the idea that all of his problems are Putin-related and not his own fault. I think that we need to make sure that kind of disinformation gets squelched right from the beginning, okay? I want to talk about some of the state races that are going on. Particularly the U.S. Senate, the governor's race, and the Secretary of State's race. I think that these races are important, obviously, but But it's, I think it's particularly important for us to kind of put these races into some perspective as we get down to less than a month to go before these races are going to be settled one way or the other, which means that we'll either have a runoff or we won't have a runoff. That's basically what's going to happen here. And in some cases, we certainly, you know, would rather see our candidates go straight to the general election. That's the game plan. So let's talk now about this Ukrainian business. You know, I've mentioned this before, that one of the key things that is required for international order is that what Putin decided to do in attacking Ukraine was not something that could stand. Okay? The post-Cold War world has really brought about some of the most important progress for material prosperity for any number of people. I mean, the Chinese came out of dire poverty. 300 million people came out of poverty just because they got into the World Trade Organization and became part of that global system. And I recognize that there are issues associated with China's progress. I get that, okay? But on the other hand, you know, the kinds of progress that humans were able to see in China or India or other places was directly related to the order that the post-Cold War world had evolved to. Now, people like Fareed Zakaria have argued that what Biden is doing in terms of framing this war as a war of democracy versus autocracy is not exactly the best way to go. And his reasoning here, and the reason I'm talking about Fareed Zakaria, because he does have a lot of influence in various circles. And so what he says matters to a very large degree. So his argument is that Biden is on the wrong path trying to sell this stand against Russia as against democracy, against autocracy. Okay, his counter argument is that it would be better to sell what we're doing as international order versus power politics. Now, and that sounds fine too. And his argument basically is that if you look carefully at what's going on in the world, there's not a great deal of support for the stance against Russia, okay? And he argues that in some cases it's national interest that conflicts with the attempt to try to put worldwide sanctions on Russia. For instance, India gets a lot of its military hardware from Russia. So they have to be careful about what they're doing there. Some countries, as we've recently, like Poland, have a lot of their energy coming from Russia. And we've said this on the show how many times now, that Bill Buckley talked about this in 1975. Do not become dependent upon Russian energy for Europe, when they started to look at pipelines back in 1975. So here again, the conflicts of national interest versus, you know, this argument the Americans are making that we have to stand up and stop the Russians does have some problems, okay? And as such, Zakaria is arguing that what we should be doing is saying that, you know, it's important that we stand for world order, not necessarily against autocracy. He goes on further to talk about this as essentially that many of our allies fit exactly the characteristics of autocracies, whether it's the Saudis or others. You get the point, okay? So if our allies are undemocratic, why should they, you know, jump through hoops to try to, you know, hurt the Russians when they themselves are just as guilty of being autocrats. So I think it's an important point to think about, okay? But here's where I depart from Zakaria, because what he's basically saying is that excuse me, if we're going to argue for world order, that takes us right back to the United Nations and the various agencies of the United Nations, like the ICC, the International Crime Commission on Crime, and the fact that the United States has never joined it is an indication of hypocrisy. Therefore, if we want to sell international order first, then we have to get on board with being part of the international order. That all sounds fine. But the significant problems with some of these agencies, whether it's the Human Rights, you know, Committee in the UN, whether it's the ICC, these groups are peopled by the very worst of the worst. The Human Rights Commission has China, Russia, other people who are really the worst abusers of human rights. So my point here is that while on the one hand I don't disagree with the idea that we should, you know, foster support for what we're doing based on international order, I don't think that that means that we have to get in bed with all of these agencies, which are in and of themselves hypocrisies, you know, to the nth degree. I think that we can stand above that, you know, and make the points that we have to make concerning international order, because it is important for economic growth, and it's important to bring people out of poverty. Those kinds of things can be sold, and I think we can do that. I don't think that we have to follow 100% jump into every agency of the United Nations. In fact, my real issue is we just need to get out of the UN, to be honest with you. But nevertheless, I realize that that's probably not going to happen. So we have to do the best we can, and that's what we've been doing, using, you know, our ambassador there when it was Nikki Haley to really hammer these people. You know, use the bully pulpit of your position to hone in on human rights abuses and other abuses that are out there. So I think that when you look at this Ukrainian war at this particular point and the justification for it, there are issues that are there. But in the big picture at this point, if we don't defeat Russia here, it's going to be, in my view, similar to what happened with the 1930s, where Hitler was able to do whatever he wanted to do, and everyone was just wringing their hands, oh, let's just give peace a chance, you know, and that went nowhere. I mean, the whole Munich issue was one of the major lessons of World War II. You know, if you just give the dictators what they want, it's only going to push them for more. And I think that that's exactly, excuse me, what we're dealing here with Putin. The fact of the matter is that, as we've talked about, this issue about why he's doing this is central to trying to figure out what to do to stop it. And again, we get back to this whole axis of evil issue, okay? The Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians are all part of this axis of evil. And if you think for a second that what happened in Afghanistan did not trigger Putin's response to go ahead and try his luck with Ukraine, you're kidding yourself. And if you don't think the Chinese are looking carefully at what's going on and, you know, making their own calculations about what they can and can't do with Taiwan, you're kidding yourself. And I think that's why it is so important to have a foreign policy that is based on realism as well as a degree of idealism linked to facts on the ground. And it just doesn't seem to me that Biden has ever been right on too many, you know, foreign policy issues, as we've talked about. And his major mistake with Afghanistan has led to an unraveling of world order. Again, that's the lesson of the 30s, for God's sake, you know? So, what to do? And I think, you know, what he's finally doing is stepping up to the plate in a much healthier way, giving the Ukrainians, now he's asking for $33 billion from Congress. They've been able to get enough hardware in there to where the Ukrainians are, in fact, doing quite well. And again, you've seen the various discussions about defending Kyiv, and then where they are right now trying to defend themselves in Donbass. But let's be clear, you know, Mariupol, we've been told for the last 3 weeks, Mariupol was a Russian victory. It's not. In my view, Mariupol has become Russia's Stalingrad. Okay? And if we can, in fact, hold out and make them bleed in Mariupol and make them bleed in the Donbass and keep Odessa from falling in the southeastern regions there, then it seems to me that, you know, the Russian grip on the Donbass area can be broken, and we can see what happens. Now, there is this very real possibility that from Kharkov south, there'll be a Russian, you know, encirclement opportunity from the north coming to the Donbass area and coming from the south to link up with the northern forces of the Russian army. We'll see how that goes. But I think that if we're willing and can get the supplies there, the Ukrainians seem to be quite capable of inflicting on the Ruskies the casualties that they deserve to be given. So we'll see how it plays out, and maybe next week we'll have a better idea. But this idea of Mariupol being Stalingrad, I think, is something to be thinking about. All right, friends and neighbors, let's move away from foreign policy. Let's talk a little bit about what has gone on with this whole business of the Secretary of Homeland Security, Mayorkas, and his new Ministry of Disinformation.
You're listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF.
Thank you, Laurie. She jumped in there while I had to take a sip of water. Okay, so the Ministry of Disinformation, I mean, this is Orwellian, okay? Not only is it Orwellian, it's going to violate the First Amendment. Now, let me read the First Amendment to you. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, okay, we know that, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, okay, got that, or, now this is critical, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble. But, I mean, you talk about freedom of speech and the right of the press. Well, guess what? In a free political system, there are going to be, guess what, disinformation, folks? There's going to be differences of agreement, differences of opinion. We're not all going to agree. That's why you have Republicans and you have Democrats. But just for the record, the Democrats have gone so far to the left, it is impossible to have a reasonable conversation with them. In fact, what they're doing is, before Elon Musk had Twitter, you know, they were freezing people out, dropping people from Twitter. Now, Trump has his thing, I think it's called Social Truth, or Truth and Social, whatever the hell it's called. Devin Nunes is the CEO of it. That's an opportunity for you know, those of us who don't want to be censored may very well find that as a place. With Elon Musk coming into power in with Twitter, we'll see where he goes with this. But they're already starting to reinstate people. We'll see if they reinstate Trump. I guess that's really going to be the real test. But my point here is, you can't have a democracy like ours without having people who have differences of opinion. I mean, whether it's the Revolutionary War, you had, you know, people who didn't agree with the revolution. They were called Tories, okay? Civil War, you know, the blue and the gray, duh. I mean, during the 30s, you had, you know, people who were interventionists on the side of Britain, and they're the isolationists. So what I'm talking about here is the inherent part of the characteristic of a free society, and they want to attack it. And just as they've attacked it in through the giant tech business, which you've all seen and you all know, and some of you have probably experienced it, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, whatever. No, they don't want any other ideas out there. And you know why? Because the left-wing, radical, BLM, Antifa, you know, whoever, progressive movement, they don't have good ideas. And so they can't argue on the public square for their ideas. So what do? Just like every other power-hungry type of person, they suppress your right to have an opinion. That's what's going on. And so what are we supposed to do with this? Well, I mean, I think the first thing we should do is you should write to Shelby, worthless as he is, and Tuberville, who might be willing to jump on this, and tell them both that in no way are we going to allow these people to create this and be funded by the U.S. government. Okay? It can't happen. But unless we say something about it, they're liable to do it. Because, again, the woke culture has a lot of friends. They are powerful. And they will buy people off to get their way. So please think about this. I mean, so conceptually, the whole thing is bogus, okay? But worse than that, I mean, if it could be worse, it is. And that's this whole idea that suddenly this lady by the name of Nina Jankowicz is going to be the minister of disinformation. Now, try to understand something. This is the same person that you may have seen doing her wonderful rap on disinformation on TikTok, which Fox has played it, okay? I mean, not only is that absurd in itself that anyone would do something as dumb as doing a TikTok rap, okay, about this and this particular issue, but nevertheless, there she is, Miss TikTok. And what she does is she exposes herself with her past attempts to create doubts about this, that, and the other. And the classic example is she bought into the collusion that came out of the whole Clinton-Trump 2016 election. Totally bought into it. And when you see people like Adam Schiff, now here's where this whole question of disinformation gets to be kind of a problem. So Adam Schiff goes on TV and he says, I've got evidence of collusion with Trump and Russia. And she agrees with that. She has a tweet about this. Now, as it turns out, the whole Russian thing was a hoax. We all know that. Has anyone called out Adam Schiff for his reliance on disinformation? No. But my point here is that here's a woman of disinformation. She's going to be running this ministry, and she is part of the problem. So again, we have so many examples of disinformation. The Hunter Biden business. I mean, she said in a tweet about the Hunter Biden laptop that this was nothing more than classic Russian disinformation. It's an information op. And she quotes the fact that 50 former national security, you know, intelligence people all testified to the fact that this is a Russian intelligence op. Good God. Okay? I mean, really? I mean, it's only coming out now that the New York Post was absolutely right in 2020 about the laptop. And all these people had fake opinions, like Schiff, like Joe Biden himself on the debate, you know? And Chris Wallace wouldn't allow a real debate about it. So my point here is that issues are always going to be political. And so for Mayorkas and Biden to think that they're going to get away with creating this Orwellian ministry of disinformation, I mean, let's hope it's a stretch, okay? But if it's gone this far, you can bet that these, you know, red state attorney generals and others are going to start suing on the basis of this Orwellian overreach and destruction of the First Amendment, okay? Let's just hope that we can prevail on this one. All right, I'm running out of time as usual. All right, I want to just say a few things. I didn't get to everything I wanted to do, but Biden is now at 33% in his polls, okay? So that's the good news there. And I do think that when you look at the issues of inflation and, you know, gas prices, food prices, all of those things translate into what should be a tsunami election in November. Let's just hope for that. We'll see how that runs. Let's talk a little bit about some of these state races, all right? Common Sense Campaign endorsed Mo Brooks a while back, okay? Then you saw what happened. He was at the top, and we endorsed him not because he was at the top, but because he is the best candidate. He is the only conservative that's running for this U.S. Senate race, okay? And so, you know, we endorsed him. Of course, the world fell apart when the endorsement from Trump was pulled, and so polls were showing Mo was at 16%, then the other people were up higher, blah, 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 okay? I would suggest to you that, number one, those polls were not necessarily real polls. A better approach would have been to wait for a really solid poll that you could really kind of trust. But nevertheless, the fact of the matter was these untrustworthy polls were put out there, and people gravitated quickly and said, oh, my God, you know, Katie Britt and Durant, especially Durant, shot up to the, you know, 34, 35% support. Suddenly, over the last 6 weeks, things have started to move in a different direction. At the Eagle Forum straw poll 3 weeks ago, guess who got 44% of the vote? Mo Brooks. Both Durant and Katie Britt were in the mid-20s. What does that say? It says Eagle Forum, as a grassroots organization, gets it. They understand what is going on and that the only true conservative candidate is Mo Brooks. More recently, this past Saturday, at the GOP Assembly, Mo Brooks got 96% of the vote. Okay? These are people within Alabama in the Republican Party. Robin Leidecker got a high enough percentage, I think you have to have 66% in order to get the endorsement of the GOP Assembly. She got that. Robin was on our show last week. That's an important step in the direction of cleaning house in the public service thing. Jim Ziegler got 62%. He didn't quite meet the threshold for endorsement, but nevertheless, 62%. He's been running at 55%. And so the argument here is that Jim Ziegler has been endorsed by the Common Sense Campaign, is that Jim seems to be not only holding his own, but standing firm to where he may not even have a runoff to deal with. In terms of the governor's race, my suggestion here is take a careful look at Ivy's ads. these ads are fundamentally false. And if you look carefully at the grassroots issues, and this has been my argument to the James campaign, use the grassroots issues. Okay? Amendment 1. We beat her 75-25. The gas tax is an absolute disaster. The $6 toll, for God's sake. I don't see how anybody down here in Mobile and Baldwin County could vote for Ivy, given what she did with that. And I'll be honest with you, maybe next week we'll talk a little bit more about it. But there is a very real possibility that ALDOT has not submitted a plan to the bipartisan infrastructure people up in D.C., and if we don't get it in soon, we ain't going to get that kind of money that we need. Excuse me again. But notice, I mean, our MPO down here has been working diligently to try to get ALDOT to move in the right direction. I think I mentioned here a couple of weeks ago, I went to an MPO meeting and nothing was said about the plan other than that ALDOT is still working to get traffic data. Hey guys, if they don't get a solid plan in within a short period of time, they're going to miss the deadline for this federal bipartisan infrastructure plan. Okay? We need this. And I would argue that, you know, here again, we get back to, is Ivy really playing a game here? You know, dangling out there the idea of a plan. She wants ALDOT. She's listening to us and all of that happy horse manure. Notice I didn't say a bad word, Lori.
Thank you very
much.
Yes,
thank you. Okay, I'm good. Pat me on the back. Okay, good boy, Lou. Good boy. All right, so it is happy horse manure. And if they don't do something quickly, well, then we'll know for sure it really was horse manure all along. Okay? So, I mean, keeping all of these things in mind, I think, is important for us going forward. I know Tim James is going to be down in this area. I'll try to get a more definitive schedule from him so that you may have a chance to see him Tuesday and Wednesday in this area. We'll see how this goes. But in my view, Tim James is the most logical candidate to take on Ivy from a grassroots perspective and beat her in the runoff. We'll see how that goes. And again, I'm not a prognosticator. I got that. But nevertheless, it just seems to me that the grassroots has an opportunity to step up to the plate here, and we damn sure better well do it. Okay. All right, Lori has been gracious enough to give me 4 extra minutes, and I think I'm going to sign off at this point, so I keep Lori with a smile on her face.
Very good. Thank you, Dr.
Yes,
Lou.
Yes, ma'am. I'm quite diligent when it comes to keeping you happy.
Good okay. show. Thank you
All
so
right.
much.
So here we are. I'm going to wrap it up, and thank you,
Go
Lori.
Ahead.
Thank you all, and make sure you come to our Fairhope Library, 6 o'clock. Tomorrow night for our forum. It's going to be a good one. Hope to see you there. Take care. God bless. See you next week. Bye.
Thank you. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review here on WABF with Dr. Lou Campomenosi of the Common Sense Campaign. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and on 181 in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of the show or you want to tell a friend to listen, it will be posted at WABF1480.com.